Sahana vavatu, sahanaum bhunaktu, sahaviryan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Bhagavat Sandarbha, Adhyayana 4, Adhikarana 5. Bhagavan is the object of all Vedic knowledge. Anucheda 11. Sukadeva replies, the Supreme Lord manifested the material intelligence, senses, mind, and vital air of the living entities so that they can indulge their desires for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, become elevated in future lives, and ultimately attain liberation. The Supreme Lord created the upadis, like intelligence, for various purposes for the sleeping jivas, jananam. He did not create jivas by his ignorance. This discards the vivartavad notion. He created the upadis for jivas employing maya, matrartam. Matra means measuring from the root, me, which also means creating illusions or maya, right? Because that's what that miyate, to measure, right? Because it's starting from, if you're starting from what creates illusions and all that, so then to measure by that, then maya means that you're measuring by that material, right? Unless it's yoga maya, then you're measuring by that particular rasa, right? He created upadis for causing action, which creates repeated birth, bhavartam, and for going to other planets and enjoying there, atmane, and for destroying what was produced, akalpanaya, producing liberation. In other words, he created upadis for artha, dharma, kama, and moksha of the jiva. That's what they're for. But ultimately, it's for going back to Godhead. So you move in this cycle of dharma, artha, kama, moksha. After a while, you get tired of that, so then you move on. And move on means going back to Godhead. So it's the world's produced for going back to Godhead, but because the living entity wants to identify himself and enjoy himself separately from Krishna, therefore he's given that opportunity. So, yeah. Moksha, in this case, means the state of consciousness alone. Yata varna vidhanam apavargas chapi bhavati. All these destinations are prescribed for the self according to the quality of their actions. As indicated in the Vedas, liberation is then achieved. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.19.19. That liberation whose essential nature is unmotivated bhakti yoga to the Lord full of qualities, who attracts the minds of all beings, who is not the object of merging, who is not described by material worlds, words, who remains beyond destruction of the universe, who is the most excellent Atma, who is the son of Vasudeva, takes place by destruction of the knot of ignorance, which causes various material goals, when there is association with devotees of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.19.20. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Brahman realization is the beginning of liberation. Right? So for us, it's the beginning of liberation, because actual liberation means merging into the spiritual existence and being absorbed in the Lord's pastimes in a relationship with Him. So that merging means full absorption, full consciousness. Right? Because, as I mentioned before, moksha in this case means a state of consciousness alone. It's a but here, we see we go beyond that. So it's the beginning. For the impersonalists, it's the end. They want to merge into this consciousness. They can't actually merge into the Lord. because they are already part of the Lord. They're already within the Lord. He's within and without. But they're still an individual entity within, just like your hand is part of your body, but it's still an individual aspect. Right? And so, then... for them, that's the goal that they're trying to get to. So they follow the whole process. For the devotees, that's just the beginning. It simply situates you beyond the material world. Right? You're situated on that transcendental situation. Then that brings you to actually entering into the transcendental planets, where then one performs service to the Supreme Lord.
It's like a situation.
It's a situation, yeah. For us, it's situational. In other words, it's just part of sambandha, but for these impersonalists, it's their prayojana. So what is their end, the top, whatever they can get? For the devotees, that's just one of the aspects. Like if you want to buy something, you need to be in the store. So for somebody, attaining the store is the ultimate goal, but they only get to the store, right? They're standing outside. But for the devotees, then they enter into the store and then they interact. So that's the thing, is that it's nothing special because they only come up to the edge. So Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha are only dealing on the outside edge. Some a little closer, some a little farther. Right? Right? But that's all it is. It's outside the spiritual planets. Right? So... the spiritual planets are effulgent because Krishna is effulgent, right? So so that effulgence means you're approaching the planet. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like saying, if you're driving in the car, right, to Calcutta, when you get to Barasat, then you think, we're almost at Calcutta. Like you see the airport, yeah, we're almost at Calcutta. Right? So the impersonal is trying to get to Barasat. That's it. But we'll go through Barasat to get to Calcutta. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the thing, is that's they don't actually understand what's going on, because it's the effulgence of the Lord. Yes, you're going to go through the effulgence to get to the spiritual planet. That's why it said that for the devotees, they go through Brahman realization to get to the spiritual. It's not, but they don't have to focus on Brahman to get there. They focus on Krishna. He's the source. If you're focusing on the person producing the Brahma Jyoti, why you wouldn't go through the Brahma Jyoti to get there? You don't have to separately. But they don't know the person. They simply focus on the Brahma Jyoti. Yeah? Brahman realization is the beginning of liberation, and Paramatma realization is still further advancement towards the realm of liberation. But one achieves real liberation when he understands his position as an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Muktir hitvan yata rupam swarupena yavastitihi. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10-6. In the material world, in the bodily concept of life, everyone is working in the wrong direction. When one becomes Brahma-Bhuta, Srimad Bhagavatam 4:30-20, spiritually realized, one understands that he is not the body and that working in the bodily concept of life is useless and misdirected. Then his devotional service begins, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 18:54. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakangshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. One who is thus transcendentally situated realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service to me. Devotional service is actually liberation. Right? So the devotee, because of being in the material world, we idolize liberation. And so then when we say the devotee is liberated, or that's the beginning, you know, liberation is the beginning. Because it said here, When one becomes Brahma-Bhuta, spiritually realized, he understands he's not the body and that working the bodily concept of life is useless and misdirected. So that means the newest devotee understands this. So they're on that Brahma-Bhuta platform. Now sometimes due to, they act within that capacity, and sometimes due to habit, they don't act within that capacity. But their position is that of liberation. That's why for the sadhaka, they're functioning on the Vijnanamaya. But that's their platform, but their consciousness is focused on Anandamaya. Right? So they're beyond the material consideration. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Because otherwise, let's say you have someone, they've gone to medical school. Having gone to medical school, now they're in the hospital doing their internship. Right? So they're in the hospital. They're in the work. They're in this, you know, all these different places doing all this stuff. You know, all medical stuff. Like that. And so they're situated there in that place. But technically they're not doctors. Right? You know, and sometimes they may have more of the mentality of the doctor, sometimes less. You know, different things like that. So, but the point is they're situated in that position, right? They're in the hospital and they're doing that stuff. You know, what are they doing? They're doing, you know, medical stuff, right? So that's the whole point, is that they're there. That's where they're situated. They may not be fully on that platform, but the point is that's where they are. So for the devotees, Brahma-Bhuta starts from understanding you're the soul, not the body. So that's already there. They may sometimes be absorbed in that, sometimes not, but that's their situation. Once you've come to that understanding, you don't actually go back into the other aspects. You don't actually go back into karma so much.
When you understand, there is no upadhi.
Yes, there's no upadhi. So that you're liberated. That's the point. Liberation is that simple. We make it into something big. You know what I'm saying? We like to do all these things, make it into something big. But, yes.
The difficulty seems to be is that during the class, our consciousness is, as you mentioned, is Vijnanamaya and towards Anandamaya. And then as soon as you leave this mandala, we go, like, immediately, it's like an unseen kind of wall or something.
When you go through the gate. Yeah. As soon as the gate closes behind you, yeah, then darkness sets in.
We're back into our conditioning, which actually, anamaya, pranamaya, you know, like, manamaya at best, like, not really, but let's put it as if.
I say from Friday night to Saturday night.
Yes. So then the interaction between devotees is very difficult on that level, because during the class we're all saints and, you know, Nityam Bhagavatam Seva is all happening. But then outside we deal as if we are conditioned, so we can't really interact. So how can we match those two?
That's why then in the Vedic system it's recommended, like this Yukta Vairagya, is that you take all the different aspects of your life that are important to you from the conditioned platform, and then you, according to regulations, you know, and recommendations, you connect that to Krishna. So that connection to Krishna, one, you're getting the benefit of it being used for Krishna, and two, because of that contemplation or now again bumping into it, that reminds you of Krishna. You know, like you're saying, you're thinking this and that. You walk into your house, you see the pictures of the deities, and then you again remember Krishna. You know, so there'll be those moments throughout the day. So that's the advantage of Yukta Vairagya, is that there's more chance of you being conscious of that connection. We've made the connection, but it's whether we're conscious of it or not. So that's what we're trying to do, is become fully conscious. You even see, even in bhava sadhana, then in smarana dasa, then you're trying to become fully absorbed in Krishna exclusively. So samadhi means it's exclusive. Before that, it's intermittent, then it's more regular, then it's steady, then it's actually meditation, you're focused on Krishna, but it doesn't have the intensity. You may be always thinking of Krishna, but it doesn't have that intensity. Then, when you come to that fifth stage, samadhi, the intensity is there. So then, that full energy, full focus, everything is there. Like, you may be conscious of Krishna, but you're not necessarily putting your full energy into it. Right? So when you're always thinking of Krishna and you're full, conscious energy, everything's focused on Krishna, then that brings you to the state of samadhi. At that point, now, you're qualified to interact with the eternal associates in direct services to Krishna. Before that, you can interact with the associates. But the point is, how will you be directly engaged? They may engage you in things for Krishna, but to directly do things directly for Krishna, unless you have that 100% focus like that, that's what Krishna has, that's what the associates have. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we may say, no, but why can't we do in this and that? So, yes, okay, so the person, comes there, and then as soon as they start their internship, then they take them into the surgery, and then they hand them the scalpel for the neuro brain surgery? No, they stand around and watch. They do things in the background. Like that. And then when they come to the point, then they are engaged. Because the point is, Krishna is consciousness. And the devotees are fully absorbed in this blissful consciousness. So when we come to that platform, that we have that focus, then you can make it all about Krishna and about love for Krishna. So we're just trying to remember that everything's connected to Krishna. Whatever we have is connected. So that's why we do the dress. If we wear the dress that was given to us, then it reminds us of Krishna. We can also forget while we're wearing it, but the tendency will be we'll remember Krishna more than if we're wearing karmic clothes. Because if you're wearing karmic clothes, then it gets into, is it in fashion? Who's more in fashion? Who's got the better stuff? This, that. It's like you have a nicer dhoti or a lesser nicer dhoti. You don't make so much distinction like that. But, you got the fancy clothes or not, you make a lot of distinction. It makes completely the difference, in the social status. While in the Vedic, it just means you have a little more money. It doesn't make you more of a gentleman. Gentleman means you're wearing the Vedic clothes like that. That makes you a gentleman, and you're wearing it as nice as you can. That's a gentleman. It has nothing to do with your wealth. But in the West, unless you have all, it's worn very nicely, and it's also well to do, you're not a gentleman. And then with that comes that whole false status and everything that goes along with that. Then you add on to that, that's just clothes. Then your paraphernalia, your car, your where you live, what house you have, what kind of furnishings in your house, what you do is, recreation, what you do is charity, what you do is a job. So it just goes on and on and on. So the point is, we as much as possible do these things that connect us to Krishna. Because these are more closer, how we dress. So that's why we dress in these ways. It reminds us of Krishna. Yes, you can wear whatever you like, but will it remind you of Krishna? No, we're Westerners. We can't wear this Indian clothes, quote unquote. They don't see it as Vedic because, they don't have enough exposure, enough experience, enough association, or enough realization to understand what is Vedic and what's not. Right? And so, but in that, it's because they're Westerners. So they're starting, we have this upadhi, we want to maintain this upadhi. And then what about eating? That also reminds you of Krishna. No, but we're Western. We have to eat this kind of food. Okay, well, what about, you go to the toilet? Is that? No, we're Westerner. So it's all based on upadhi. So there's nothing to remind you. Because the point is, if there's any chance that, now and again you remember Krishna because of the devotional attire or things like that, or the food, or how you live, or the different ways you do things, the rules and regulations that regulate human life, then it's perfection. Even if you just remember once, that's perfect. But this other way, it's guaranteed you won't. You'll just remember you're a Westerner. You know? Does that make sense? So there's no yukta, and people will say, no, we're using the Western stuff, that's yukta vairagya. No, that's not yukta, not vairagya. You're wearing it because it's an upadhi. And you're not connecting it to Krishna, you're connecting it to your upadhi. There's zero yukta vairagya. But, you know, if you talk fancy, it sounds good. That's why Lord Chaitanya says it's not by logic you can understand. Because people can logically present material life and make it sound fabulous. You know? That's the whole thing. They just don't. So, therefore, then all the different rules and regulations that are there that purify existence, that uplift the consciousness, even if it's on the just dealing with the material aspects, how you use the mind, how you use the senses, the intelligence, the identity, they're material elements, but you're using them in the context of regulating them because of your interest in pure devotional service. So those same regulations will take you through to pure devotion service. As you get purified, then those become less important, the pure devotional service becomes more prominent. But if we're saying it's about pure devotional service, but identifying with the upadis and demanding that this is our right to act in this way, then one's going to be slowed down so much more because you're so much thinking about how, oh no, we're not fanatic, we do like this, we do like that. Oh, no one will be interested in Krishna consciousness if you present it from this quote-unquote Indian point of view. Yes?
There's one story of Ramanujacharya.
Mm.
In Srirangam, a logician came and told him, okay, I want to debate with you. And Ramanuja wasn't inclined, but then he accepted.
Okay.
So for 17 days, they had this debate.
Wow.
And this logician was like the best in the south, like in the whole India.
Yeah.
And he actually defeated Ramanuja.
Right.
And Ramanuja, you know, after the debate is finished, in the evening of the 17th day, he goes to Rangaji and says, Lord, what is going on? You know, I'm your devotee. I'm, you know, but by this jnani, I'm defeated. What, you know, what should I do? And then Sri Ranga, he says, don't worry, just go tomorrow, because it's the last day, you know, it's like whatever it is, the last ceremony.
Right, right.
And just go there, have faith in me. He says, but you know, I'm like, it's a shame to go there, because I'm defeated completely. Everybody, the whole assembly is accepted, I'm defeated. So he said, don't worry, just go to sleep now, and then tomorrow morning, just go there, into the arena, and don't worry, I'll help you. Ramanuja says, okay, you know, I'm embarrassed, but what to do? If I'll go there, at least I'll follow, you know, his order. So next morning, he wakes up, takes his bath, everything, and then he feels some happiness inside because he's following the order of the Lord.
Mm.
And then he goes there into the arena, and, you know, like without any inhibition or anything, just walks in. And then he has, you know, a touch of smile in his face because he's meditating on the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So this logician, he's looking at him and he can't figure him out. And then he just pays his dandavas, like full dandavas, and says, okay, I accept you as my guru. Mm-hmm. Ramanuja says, you know, you defeated me, it's obvious, everybody accepted. He says, no, I defeated you, but I'm still miserable. But I see you, after defeat, you still so happy. So what is, you know, what is the secret of your happiness? Please tell me.
Yeah.
So he accepted him as a disciple.
Yeah, yeah.
So happiness, it's a state of the heart.
Yes.
So we can't really, logic or no logic, or whatever it is. It doesn't.
Yeah, because we're a living entity. Yeah, very nice. Nice story. I never heard that story.
I never heard it also. Vidyana Maharaj, he's writing one book about the South, you know, tradition.
Okay.
So he got that story.
Yeah, no, it's nice.
It's really good.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, so we're just trying to surround ourselves, because like this, whether it's Indian, not Vedic, not, this is what the Acharyas have given us. And so this is what we do. They do that when they come here, that's how they dress, that's how they eat, that's how they behave. And they're coming from the spiritual world, and they see fit coming here, that this is how you behave. And no matter where they are, whether they're in the ashram, they're out on the road, they're at a program, they meet the king, whatever, they have their lifestyle and the way they deal. And so then for us, like that, like you're saying, Ramanujacharya then just follows the Lord's order. So this is what we do. And logicians can doubt and debate and whether this is this or this is that. But the point is this is what Srila Prabhupada gave us. And this is what we do. So if we want to go to the spiritual world, you do what they do. You want to stay here, do what the people here do. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, what's that? What's that guy? Yeah, I don't remember. But, we have to give up that mundane identity. You know what your conditioned identity is, and then you try to engage that. So the first thing is that we're engaged in the direct activities. You know, hearing, chanting, holy name, hearing Bhagavatam, the association of devotees. Then we're worshipping the deity, we're living in the holy dham. So these things we're doing. Then the next is those things that, you know, we need to adjust because of, you know, we have a good background, a pious background or not. Then we adjust those things to bring it into line where it becomes useful using for Krishna. Right? And so then we follow the tradition, the Varna ashram and things like that. You know, the ashram aspects and all. Then the next one will be, then further out will be, are the Varna aspects. You know, how we maintain ourselves. What occupation we do. What's the nature? What do we do? And like that. And so all these different ones we're regulating according to the recommendation of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And then from that, then we're, that regulation, that will bring about purity on its own. It will bring about an increase in the consciousness, because there's more opportunity we see there to be connected to Krishna. And then the direct activities are directly connecting us to Krishna. And so then it becomes nice. And so that's what we do. So we're not saying is that because you wear a dhoti that makes you Krishna conscious. But the point is there's a better chance you're going to remember Krishna wearing a dhoti than not. Just like, let's say you're walking down the street, you're wearing a dhoti. People deal with you differently. You're like in a little bubble. And they're all looking at you and, you know, who are these people? Right? So you're not part of their world. You are liberated. Because you're not part of the world. But you go in karmic clothes, they look at you like every other karmi. And trying to judge you and, like, what's it? The sensuous gauge of, no, sensuous gaze of inspection. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Where do you fit in? Are you best dressed better than them or not? You know, if you're somebody to interact with or not, and all these things. So you're part of their world. So it's just that little bit more. Yes?
It's just a personal observation, is that everybody wants attention.
Yes.
But if you, like you're explaining, if you wear devotee clothes, because devotees also want attention.
Right.
They want the attention, but they can't take the intensity when people are looking at you.
Right.
Like you're saying.
Yeah.
So they want the attention, but they can't take it as much. So that's why sometimes they wear, sometimes they don't wear.
Yeah.
Most of the time they just can't.
Yeah.
Because it's
yeah, because the intense, because the thing is, we want the attention, but for us.
Yes.
This is, you're getting the attention, but it's for Krishna.
Yeah.
So since it's for Krishna, of course it's going to be more intense. So you're getting the attention, and that's drawing attention to the devotees. Because the people see, they know it's devotees. Like that. So then that's special. And even if you do say, that, okay, some people can't handle that intensity and all that. So, but they should have respect for those who can, rather than, oh, they're lower and I'm higher because I'm wearing karmic clothes. I'm a more elevated materialist. I mean, spiritualist. The others, oh, it's just out external garb. And, but why are you wearing what you do? Because we're because of our apati as Westerners. So this comes down to just the basic thing is your standard stuff that the Indian bogus gurus do. They say, oh yes, these others do this, but we have this, you know, this simple, you think we're more superior. You know, each guru is trying to say is that his system is superior and his followers are superior to everyone else. It's like Indian bogus guru 101. You know? So we have, it's just the way it is in India. You know, they're the ones that are on this border, they can be spiritual or not. You know, so Westerners don't, they're not very good at this. You know? So they should respect those who are willing to. Maybe, you know, they're not defined in this and that, but at least they have that idea, why are you wearing? Because this is what Guru has given. You know? Like that. And so then that has to be respected. Like that. You know, then if you say, oh, but Guru's also said you don't have to change your position. But the point is, did he say that you identify with it? You're not changing your position, that's fine. No problem at all. But are you supposed to identify with it? Because Prabhupada said here, you know, it means that it starts, begins with this understanding that we're spiritually, when one becomes Brahmabhuta, spiritually, one understands he is not the body and that working with the bodily concept of life is useless and misdirected. Then his devotional service begins. So you're giving that up. You may be in your position because you're comfortable with that, and that's fine. But you're giving up that identity. That's why he said it's a matter of consciousness. Where did he say that? I don't know, there's omission. It's a matter of the consciousness. So it's the change in the consciousness. But if we're identifying it as Westerners, then we haven't changed the consciousness. Right? Yes?
In the beginning of Jiva Dharma, there's a description that Sannyasi Mayavadi comes and he meets the Baba.
Right.
And then he wants to be accepted into the Sangha.
Right.
Then he asked Babaji, should I change my dress? And the Babaji said, it doesn't matter. He just welcomes him and says,
right,
however you want it, it's all external.
Yes.
But then within like 2 or maybe maximum 3 days, after he gets initiation, he himself takes the initiative, changes the dress, puts Kantimala, puts Tilak, and then when he meets the Babaji, then Babaji is described, he's very pleased with that.
Yes.
So it is external, but it's pleasing to Guru and Krishna.
Yeah.
So why not to do it? Because he told him it's external. But then when disciple understands the mood of the teacher, then he does and then the teacher is obviously pleased.
Because it's external, but the point is the body's external, the mind is external, the intelligence, the ego is external, false ego is external, all that's external. Polluted consciousness is external. So when you bring that all in line with Krishna, so if in the beginning it's like that, but you find with time by associating, that's why Sadhu Sangha then brings about Bhajana Kriya. It's just natural. You know, you are identifying yourself in a particular way, then you add Krishna consciousness. But after a while, Krishna consciousness becomes more important. Those devotees become more important because you dress the way you dress because you want to fit into that sangha. But then now you want to fit into the devotee sangha. So yes, maybe at work you have to wear a particular kind of clothes or, you know, when you do certain duty, that may be expected because that particular sangha expects that, and that's fine. But the point is the consciousness doesn't have to be there. You know? And then that way you regulate the life. you know, on the aspects of varna, on the aspects of ashram, and on the aspects of direct devotional service. So that way then there's more chance that you're going to remember Krishna. And that's the whole idea. You regulate your life, you associate with devotees, there's much more chance you're going to remember Krishna. Because these other ways, if we hold on to these, the attachments, then whatever you are doing that's connected to Krishna, you'll get benefit for. But those things that are not connected because of being consciously aware of not connecting them, then those things are going to be stumbling blocks. At some point you have to deal with them. At some point you have to give them up. You know, and so we have to be very, very careful to not pit the modern intellectual society against the Vedic culture. Because in their idea, India is just another place. They don't believe in the Vedas. They don't believe. They know it's some books written, just like we have books in the West. They also have their books, and then they date them 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. They all put it in within the last few thousand years, you know, because they can't handle that there's a book that they had well before we had, you know. So there's that point of just the Western civilization is superior, and so then that difficulty comes down is that they can't appreciate simplicity. They can't appreciate the straightforwardness and all these. They don't mind being straightforward in the way of saying whatever they feel like without culture. You know, just being uncultured and saying whatever they like. But being able to say whatever they like with culture, that's not part of the culture. Right? So it's just... You can't pit the two, because they'll look at it and says, oh, all this is that. In their mind, whatever they have observed, that's knowledge. And that's objective. And whatever we're saying, that's subjective. But the whole point is that being a living entity, you only work on subjective. It's an illusion that there is this idea of objectivity from their point of view. Because they have rules, you can only do this. You know, just like we were hearing in the big French university, some professor mentioned that, you know, just by logic, you know, 50% chance there's no God, but 50% chance there is God. And because he mentioned that, he was fired. So that's not objective. That's totally subjective according to their own idea of what they see. They see something, but they'll only see it how they want to see it. They'll only accept it how it fits into their theory. I have a theory, I'm the chair, and if it doesn't fit my theory, it's bogus. You know, or we'll make adjustments to it so it does fit my theory. And if you want change in the academy, you have to wait for the next person in the chair. And because, you know, it is a Brahminical kind of thing, so it's more of kind of a lifetime aspect, you have to wait till the guy dies. You know, and so you're going to wait some time. Because somehow or another, Brahmins tend to live a long time, you know. Especially the ones you want to get rid of, you know. The annoying guy, that he somehow or another lives forever. You know, and that really great teacher, that great professor, you know, he somehow or another transfers, or, you know, has something else to do, or, you know, and like that. Yeah. So we have to be very, very careful that this conditioned concept that, oh, it's accepted by the Western intellectuals, therefore it's automatically correct. And then the Vedic, we're going to judge according to that measurement, that niyate, that they're just measuring by their own illusion. Right, so if they can't see it with their senses, anamaya, it doesn't exist. And so that puts them on the level of basically just a sophisticated animal. It means literally, by consciousness, that's all the more they are. You know, and now and again they get a little bit sentimental, a little bit political, and think about the greater the people and this and that, so there's a touch of pranamaya there. But as far as how they gain knowledge, it's basically going to be anamaya. Right? I may have from somebody before who did some research work. He used his anamaya platform, right? Then he documents that, that's accepted by others. then they study that. That's as close as they get to pranamaya. But the knowledge is still inductive. It's from their senses. And so the concept of deductive knowledge in real sense, they don't accept. So that's a great fault in their consciousness, because they can't elevate themselves beyond a middling level of pranamaya. They can't get up to manamaya, vijnanamaya, anandamaya. They just can't. It's just not possible. So we have to be very careful not to judge the Vedic standards by modern standards. You know, it's always wrong. It's one of the discussions that comes up in history is, can we judge people previously in history by present history? You know, because at the time, it was a different time. There were different values. There were different everything. How people approached it was very different. And if you use today's values, yeah, everybody's wrong. So you have to be very, very careful about that. Even within the academy, there's cracks on that kind of approach. So then it basically comes down as if we're actually being objective, then we can't stake that position so strongly. We have to take it's another point of view, it's another approach, has another purpose. And that would be accepted if you're honest. But if you're saying, no, my way we see is the way, then that's very self-centered, that's very materially subjective, and it's based on false ego. So there's no glory in taking that position. But we see as the Vedic system can accommodate that you have practice, you have attachment, you have just your routine. Keep that. Just start pure using it connected to Krishna. Then those parts that can be used as they are, then very, like say someone's very regulated, they get up on time, this, go to bed on, that's a very good thing to use in Krishna's service. They've just been using it for material, now use it for spiritual. Right? So all these things, whatever's useful remains, whatever's not, you adjust until it's useful. Right? You know, if you're non-vegetarian, you can adjust it until you are. Right? You know, so there's regulation. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that, then it's standard. It's standard that there's regulation in eating. Just like you see in any of the religious circles of the world, there's some regulation in their eating habits. Whatever it may be, but there's regulation. So that's the whole idea is that why, if that's there in all world religions, why there wouldn't be with us? You know? The only difference, we're connecting it back to the eternal position of religion. In other words, you're following a religion, why? Someone's following a religion. Okay, they're a good religious person. Why? Because they want a prosperous situation for them and their family, you know, at present and in the future. So it's karma. Or some are religious because they want liberation. But we're religious because we want pure bhakti. It's just why you're using it. Just like cooking. You can use it for yourself. You can use it to please Krishna. Does that work?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like that, then you try to connect things the best way you can, and then you do the best. And so, you know, when you walk out the gate, then you forget about Krishna. Then when you drive by the temple, you might remember Krishna. You know, you go down the road, you see some senior devotee, you might kind of remember. And when you get home, you walk in the door, you know, like, you know, when you walk up the stairs and, oh, this guy didn't do this and went like that, or this is such a mess, and, you know, all these different things. But when you walk in the door, then the deities are there, so you offer your obeisances. Can you remember Krishna? Right? Then it's time for breakfast, which is Krishna. Yes.
It's maybe better to work.
Better to?
To work with a tapa.
Yeah, no, you can do that also. You can drive. So then, yeah, because but it might be a mixed then.
It seems that actually in the presentation of Vedic culture, people were walking. Makes more contact with the nature or something like that.
Well, if you go on the go on the scooter, then you're just having more contact with wind. So you're still contacting nature. And then if you're not careful, then you also get contact with the earth.
Like that.
Sorry?
And get contact with people.
Yeah, you also get contact with people like that.
Animals.
Yeah, so much. The thing is, it means that aspect is there, but you want to be careful not to make that into an identity or an upadhi. Because it's like, of course, the natural environment and all that is there. But if it's a matter of by walking, then you're going to, you know, spend, you know, let's say, basically, what, here to your place and back walking. So it must be like 30 minutes?
Up, down.
It means from here to there.
Forty minutes.
Okay. 40 minutes.
It's fast.
Okay. So even say 45.
Yeah. Relax. Walk 50 minutes.
50 minutes. Okay. So that's 50 minutes. Then 2 50-minute means 1 hour and 40 minutes. Right.
Twice.
No, I'm saying it means you walk here, then you walk back. You know. So then. That's 1 hour and 40 minutes, right?
No, I think I didn't understand. From my place to here,
right.
One side walk is 25 minutes.
Okay, so 50 minutes total. But yeah. Still, it's 1 hour, 40 minutes going twice a day.
Yes.
So now, if you have that time and chant and do all these other things, then it works out. But if you don't, then using a bicycle or a scooter or, you know, whatever else you get your hands on, you know, like that, what do you call it? An amphibious eight track, you know, with the treads, you know, you can just, now that would be really quick, right? You just go straight here through the field and just like that down there. Yeah. So then, So from that you have to consider. So then it's just a matter. Yes, if things are more natural, everything's working in that way, that's good. And if you can function in that way, that'll be more ideal. But ultimately it's about using your time for Krishna. That's the main point. Just like eating. Yes, of course, if everything's organic and natural and this and that and how you say, you know, free range vegetables and all that kind of stuff like that, then it's really nice. But at the same time, is the main thing is that you're eating so that it means to absorb yourself in Krishna and to be, maintain the body. You know, so if you're out and, you know, and like Prabhupada said, if you're hungry, any old nonsense will do. So sometimes you're out doing this and that, and you're not going to get, you can't say that guy on the side of the road, you know, the mudi, it's all organic mudi and organic mustard oil and organic chickpeas and organic, you know, spices and, you know, that is that funky aluminum cup that he's using, that's, you know, was hand-mined and hand-made and all that. And, you know, so, but the point is if you need to eat, you eat. And of course, if you want to make that as a more important principle than Krishna consciousness, then you can. And whatever you're connecting to Krishna, then that's always good. You'll always get a benefit for that. But then the problem comes is then you risk the chance that you have to come back to be a someone who's totally into health foods. You know? Like that. You know? Yes?
This is why Narad Muni couldn't get the darshan of the Lord. Or he couldn't actually go back to Bhagavad at the end of his first life,
because
he was too attached to the mode of goodness.
Too attached to the mode of goodness. Oh, okay.
Narayan told me, I want to be here again because you still have to enjoy the nature and everything because you,
yeah.
That's your attachment.
Yeah, so that's a very, I like that approach, because then then that brings it even more, it brings it out of that field. Otherwise, it's an argument within the field. You know, is that, okay, so, okay, you eat those things. Okay, yeah, you did your service now, but what about in the long run? You know, after 20 years, then what's going to happen? You know, then what service? You know, so it takes it in, it's the mode of goodness that's being attracted to. Maybe one doesn't understand that. You know, like the Western health food personality, they don't understand it. They're going to the gym. It's more about the mode of goodness. You know, it's like the feelings that they get, and it's good. They feel healthy, they feel strong, they feel this, they feel better, and all of that. It's a mode of goodness, but they're using it for passion and ignorance. They'll use it for, they look good, they look, sense gratification, and, you know, prestige. You know, they look better than someone else, like that. You know, like it's always a popular one, like on the, I say, like, these, how you say, kind of like social magazines and all that, that some big celebrity had a baby, and then there's a photo of them, you know, 3 months or 6 months after the baby, and they look really fit, and everyone's so surprised, you know, whoa, wow, check this out, you know, what regime did they do, or, you know, like that, and like that. So there's always going to be those aspects that are going to pollute it. And then if you're attached to these things, that's what will bring you back, is the mode of goodness. You're attached to these. Yeah, you're in the natural environment, the natural food, the fresh air, you know, like that. You know, so are they wearing handmade clothes? Are they going for handmade cloth? Because if that was the thing, they're really into that. Why isn't everybody wearing khadi? I guarantee you there's no health food freaks that I've ever bumped into that are wearing khadi. That is actually handmade cloth, hand spun, hand woven. Are they wearing it? No. You know, they're wearing their regular karmic clothes and this and that. You know, some of them are a little careful if it's synthetic or not. But it's like the food has to be natural, but the clothes they wear don't have to be.
Handmade computer.
Sorry?
Handmade computer.
Handmade by computer.
No, handmade computers.
Handmade computers, yeah. The Preeti Bardhan Maharaj, when he was a kid, he handmade his computer. You know, in a wooden box, you know, because there wasn't a, you know, he's a kid.
Real
so.
Nerd.
Yeah, that's bona fide nerd. Yeah, that's bona fide nerd. So it has a limitation. So, yes, if that's the nature, you prefer that kind of element of goodness, and you do it as much as you can. But you have to avoid it being an identity. It's just something, it works. It means if it is better for health and for your health, then do it. Nice. But you also have to remember is what's good for your health may not be good for someone else's health. Just like, you know, a very, you know, I would say very strong, you know, some strong examples. Let's say salads or raw food. Someone who has a pita constitution, it works very well for them because the body's so hot, it'll digest anything. You know, you could probably eat nuts and bolts and they digest it. But if you're vata or kapha, it doesn't. It may help as roughage, but you won't get so much benefit from it. You know? Or let's say more ghee or oil or like this. That works for vata. Pita does all right. Kapha doesn't. They just look at the bottle. They just look at you putting olive oil on your salad and they get fat. Just watching. They didn't even eat it. They just looked at it. You know? Like that. And so, but the vata, without the oils and stuff, the body hurts. You need the oil to keep it all, like if you always have constantly air, you need oil to keep it from drying out. You know? So that's it. You have these differences. So that's also a problem, is if it's just that it's natural, okay, that's nice. And why is that nice? Because it's Krishna's system that things are naturally grown. How agriculture is Krishna's system. It's not modern. Like Prabhupada points out, you cannot manufacture grains. They cannot manufacture vegetables. They can't go in the and just manufacture them. They have to grow it from nature. You know, they may have to put their little spin on it, they use their tractor, or they use their chemicals, or this and that, but they're still dependent upon nature for food. They're still dependent on Krishna for food. They can't manufacture it. So, everything that they're using comes from nature. And so then, that means then there's a natural way, an original way that it's used. And so, yes, of course, it would be all done. We talk about cow dung and this and that. But you'll even have devotees saying, oh, you shouldn't use it like that. You know? And so the difficulty comes up is that these natural things, then we will see the natural, but according to our conditioning and therefore our angle. And because of that, then we will project that everybody else should follow the natural regime that I do. You know, someone else, I only live in a small place. I'm very, you know, simple and this and that. Why do they have such a big place? But the point is ether is also part of human life. And so if someone requires more ether, then they have a bigger place. Or they have a bigger yard, like a small house and a big yard for this space. You know, some way there's space. You know, so that's the thing is that on the material platform, the Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, everybody has a different opinion. But on Anandamaya, on Bhakti, there is no different opinion. You know, that's Bhaktivinoda Thakura makes that point, is that in the spiritual world, there is no difference of opinion. Maybe difference of tastes, but no difference of opinion on the way that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They don't have a differentiation there. He is the Supreme Lord. His energies were energy. We serve under his superior energies. Like that. It means in Vaikuntha they serve under Lakshmi. In Dwarka they serve under his energies there. You know, and they serve the devotees. They serve that. They do everything to please Krishna. So we have to see is that it's all there. And okay, but are we doing the natural living in that because it pleases Krishna, or are we doing the natural living because it's better for my health? And so as long as you're concerned about your health, you'll live that way. But if you at some point don't care about your health, you'll live in a different way. You know? So that's the thing is we're establishing. Well, if it's established because Krishna does it that way, whether you like to eat natural or not, that's all that's available. If everyone's doing agriculture according to the natural form, because that's the way Krishna gave it, then there is nothing else other than natural. So it's actually, that's the superior approach. But if we're attached to that, we get attached to the mode of goodness, and then that can keep us in the material world. Is that something else? So we have to be, we want to be careful that way. So that's why we're saying is that these things are, yes, these are aspects that all these levels can be connected to the mode of goodness. You know, the senses, the social structure, the performance of duties, and the understanding that we're the soul, not the body. All this can be connected to goodness. But otherwise, people are engaged in these things for their own benefit, which is passion, due to their being covered by ignorance. So we're therefore getting rid of that ignorance that is connected to us. It's not passion, it's not about us, it's about Krishna. So at least minimum we're situated in goodness, trying to get to pure goodness. So being situated in Vijnanamaya means you're in goodness. From that you're trying to get to pure goodness, or Anandamaya. And to believe, you know, in service to Krishna. Then it becomes very, very solid. Right? Then it's solid. And that's actually sustainable. That's why it says real liberation when one understands position as the eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. Because other than that, all these other positions of liberation, then they're temporary. Like that. They're that. So, and why are they temporary? Because they don't go on to Krishna. So all these things of engaging the senses, the mind, the intelligence, you know, in purifying activities is all good as long as you keep going to Krishna. But if one identifies with those things, then one doesn't, you know? You know, it's just like, let's say, you're sitting down, you know, with some devotees, and everybody's, you know, whatever's the situation, they have their own food. Now, if the conversation about the devotees and devotional service and other things like that, then you know it's a nice conversation. But if it's a matter of it's about the food and like, you know, how can you eat that? That's going to kill you and all that. You're destroying the planet and, you know, this is nonsense and, you know, Krishna's not going to accept that, and even though you offered it to him and he ate it. But all these different things, it's going to be, it's not about sadhu sangha. We can see the identity is I eat natural food. And therefore, if someone else is not, I don't have any tolerance of that, because you know, they're destroying themselves, they're destroying the planet, they're destroying, you know, if they want to destroy themselves, fine, but why do we have to go down with them? You know? Like that. All the while, these conversations are all happening in the city, by city people. People in the country don't argue over this stuff. You know? They don't have any issues on this. They like out there, they do their farming, they have their cows, and, you know, they're quite comfortable in their lifestyle. And if there's any little bit of, you know, other desires, then they have money, they buy it. You know, so they may be playing video games in that all wooden house made from, you know, from logs from their land and all that, while they eat snacks that are grown on their land there and, you know, cooked at home and, you know, like this. But whatever it is, but the point is that these are all political discussions amongst city people, because they discuss it for now, but then after some time, are they still doing that? The natural food person today, come back after 10 years, are they still into that? If they are, then you know, okay, here's a diehard. Here's someone serious about it. But for many people, it's something they go through for 1-2 years, as long as it's in fashion. You know? You know, just like now, fashion, the natural foods, of course, is more stable now because the economy's figured out how to make money off of it, so people are, you know, will buy it. But let's say vegan, that's the fashion. But give it a couple of years and nobody will be talking about vegans anymore. You know, because all those who it was a fad about then won't be vegans anymore. You know, they'll all be meat eaters again.
It's meaning that till we reach the stage to identify with Krishna servant, we have many different designations.
Yes, yes, that's exactly. Exactly. Means if that's what's the whole point here, is that this, what we're opening the Anucheda, that if we don't have Krishna consciousness, there's upadis. The Supreme Lord manifested the material intelligence, senses, mind, vital air of the living entities so that they could engage their desires for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, become elevated in future lives, and ultimately attain liberation. So ultimately goes to that. So the Supreme Lord created the upadis, like intelligence, for various purposes of the sleeping jivas. Right? They're not created from ignorance. Right? So they're a transcendental energy. But they get covered by ignorance, and so they get covered by these upadis. So the intelligence is an upadi. So the person who thinks that they're so intelligent, you know, like that, the scholar, then it's an upadi. It'll be a problem. So to introduce into the society this aspect of modern academia, and that's a status, that's a problem. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur then it made recognized degrees for the devotees, but they were all based on spiritual values, all the spiritual books and all this. So you put some letters after the name, people know that, okay, you've done some study and all that. You know, because that's just how they document it. So you have this, and they'll ask you, oh, what, you know, they haven't seen that before. You know, oh, what is this? You know, and then you'll explain to them, it's an opportunity for Krishna consciousness. But it's just PhD, then it's like, oh. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole thing, is that you can use these things. But the point is if they become an upadi, like you're saying, we're Westerners, where's your academic degree? What's your qualification for doing this? What's the qualification for anybody saying what's the qualification? You know what I'm saying? You have people who don't have a qualification, but because of the society and the organization, then people feel that they're the right person for a particular job, you know, service in the society, and then they have authority over others, and then they tell them, oh, where's their qualification? You have to get a karmi degree. But where's their degree? Where's their authority to tell them they got to get a karmi degree? Where did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur or Srila Prabhupada expect that you'll have a karmi degree to work in things within the society? Yeah, you need a karmi degree to get a job outside, if that's what you're going for. But to need a karmi degree within the society? These are just straight up front upadis. We're dealing on a purely mundane consciousness here. Because the point is the materialists, they themselves will not know how to deal in a devotional environment. Where do they teach how you improve the character of a student? Right? It's just like in management, one of the first things you have to be is Krishna conscious and ability to identify someone's, you know, position in varna and ashram. Where do they teach that in any man, you know, even in an MBA? Where do they teach that? Nowhere. You know, or education. Where do they teach how to cultivate the character and bring out the devotional understanding and faith in the Lord? Where do they teach that? Nowhere. You know, they might have a little module, you know, that's there and mention a few things and that, but that's it. You know? Does that make sense? And, you know, as we see practically, businessmen don't have degrees. The one who owns the business doesn't have a degree. The guys he hires, yes. So that's the whole thing, you know. You know, these big musicians and these famous musicians, do they all have degrees in music? No. So that's the whole thing. The guy with the degree in music might have taught one of these famous people when they were kids and first learning. But by the time they're, you know, 12, 15, they're on their own and they've totally surpassed that teacher. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that you don't have that. So we have to be careful of these upadis. So these upadis of degrees, these upadis of management, you know, these upadis of, you know, that we're Westerners and this and whatever it is, the mind, the entire, how you're going to interpret everything. You know, it's dictated how you should emotionally respond. And then that's considered freedom? No, that's 1984. That's Orwellian right there, you know. It's that you don't speak the party line, then you're wrong, you know. And the party line includes not accepting any other authority than the party. You know, the Vedic, the traditions, all these are thrown out. So you see, is this whole wide range of upadis that are connected with the mind, the intelligence, the ego, except, oh, we're Westerners, that's the ego. Oh, we're academics, so we're intelligent, or we're smart, or we're so clever, or we're logical. You know? Like, this are all these, and the emotions is, oh no, this is how the words are interpreted. This is the political correct position. You don't have that, you're wrong. You're not human. So, these three upadis, and then as we mentioned, the polluted consciousness that we generally talk on, you know, perception in the modern is through anamoy, though you have to, if you want to be politically correct, you have to seemingly situate yourself in pranamoy. You know, talk about the social. But you have to go against manamoy, because that's tradition, that's religion. That, you have to be opposed to that, like that. And then from that, then you say we're not the body, though you're not, that point is just to establish an external upadi. Like that, so you're not on that point. And it's about pleasing Krishna. Yes, the devotees want to develop that pure unalloyed devotion for Krishna, but the process in between, and the culture in between, the religion in between, they may not want to accept that. So, how far they get, that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness, it will continue. You won't be lost. So however far you get, you'll get to there, and then it'll continue. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So we need to... So that's why in the Vedic system, since these things are there and you have to deal with them, people do have these upadis. Therefore, you take these upadis and connect them to Krishna. That's Yukta Vairagya. People start to, oh, if we're using cameras and that, and cars and planes, that's Yukta Vairagya. No, using your body, your mind, your intelligence, your false ego in Krishna, so that's Yukta Vairagya. You know? That's the whole point. Then these others, they're connected to the body and senses, so naturally in that way they get connected also. But if you haven't connected the field of action, means your body and senses and mind and intelligence and ego, then where's the question of Yukta Vairagya?
It's only in the mind.
It's only in the mind, yeah. Does that make sense? Yes, so this whole thing is about taking these upadis and using them to advantage to purify ourselves, to bring us to that actual transcendental position. in which we can enter into the Lord's association. So that's what we're trying to do. And if we want to hold on to these things, you can. But it just, you risk another birth. And you risk another birth being a Westerner, if you're attached to that, or an academic, if you're attached to that, or a scholar, you know, if you're attached to that, or you're a big, big manager, if you're attached to that. The demigods are all managers. And if you're attached to that, you could end up as a demigod. You know? So, you know, all these things are there. You have to know what you're dealing with. And so if that's appreciated, then you'll know, yes, I engage in all these things, but I don't identify with them. I'm comfortable in these positions, but I don't identify. So that's the point. The neophyte tends to identify. The Madhyama doesn't identify, but he's comfortable there. And for the Uttama, that's what you have. That's what you use. You know? So it's like, you know, as Kolabetsa Sridhar, he has that nature and position, you know, in the, seemingly as a Shudra. So he does those duties for Lord Chaitanya. And you see, Lord Chaitanya is very pleased. He goes over to his house and spends lots of time with him. Not that he's a Shudra, he never goes over there. No, he's always over there. You know, and then when he's in Vrindavan, he has a spiritual form, then he uses that. So the Uttama is just whatever it is, that's what you use. You're not attached to it. The Madhyama, they're not attached, but they're comfortable. They prefer, like that. They intellectually prefer doing intellectual stuff, or they prefer doing that, or they prefer working with money, or whatever it is. But the point is their results are for Krishna, so it's Nishkam Karma Yoga. Like that. And then when you identify with it, that's Sakam. So to take Sakam and equate that with pure devotion, that's really a lack of understanding of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. I mean, like, really, like, you know. It's really a misunderstanding. Like that. You have to know what you're working with. That's reality. And so whatever it is, it doesn't matter. We make it matter, but it doesn't matter. It pleases Krishna, go back to Godhead. You know, the gopis, Mother Jashoda, like that, they're women. They do women stuff. And they're the best devotees. So it doesn't matter. Does that make sense? Whatever your position. You have children. They're Prahlad Maharaj, he's a kid. 5 years old. So it doesn't matter. You know? And as far as his father is concerned, he's uneducated. Yeah. But he's the king of the demons. So that means he's king of 7 planetary systems. Think about that. But as far as his father is concerned, he's uneducated. So like that, we just use whatever's there, whatever we have, and whatever it is that we use for Krishna. How did this get there? Oh, is that what happened? Okay. Yeah. Good. Okay.
And more difficulty to stay on Vigyan Mail or Kamanamaya platform. We face it is that mind is stored of samskara of previous lifetimes to now, and it has experiences of material activities and enjoyments.
Right.
So the utsa and shared idea to do material activities and have patience for getting results is more in Anandamaya and Pranamaya activities.
Right.
But when we do spiritual activities, we don't have previous samskaras of experiences of the joy we get from that activities.
Right.
So while doing activities, we don't get that connection and dynamic relationship with Krishna. So it becomes difficult to have utsaha nishcha dhairya in this side of Vigyanmaya and Anandamaya platform.
Okay.
So how do we make this?
How do we connect this by we don't have previous experience of the spiritual? That's why then the Puranas are so important, because then we see how great personalities and general personalities and like that. Prahlad Maharaj as a kid, and Kunti Devi is as a mother, and you know all these others, kings, Paramahamsas, Brahmacharis, Kasya, how they attain perfection. So in this way we gain experience. And we say we perform these activities, there's no connection to Krishna. No, there is connection to Krishna. We're not appreciating it. But we're connected. We're taking prasad, that's Krishna. We may appreciate it or not, but it's Krishna. So it's just a matter of time. As you get purified, and you, that's why you associate with devotees who are more advanced, then it's something closer to you. And we read the histories and all that. Yeah. Okay? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rai Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.